Back in June, I gave a Sunday school class, and my topic was things the Bible doesn't say. And one of the things, the underlying theme was that God is always active. We might not necessarily notice, might not necessarily see it, but the hand of God is at work at all times. So really, you know, the topic was that God is always active. The hand of God is always at work. God's not sitting back. An example of something that is not in the Bible is a battle at Kadesh. Now, this is the city of Kadesh was eventually destroyed in, I believe it was about 1130 BC. But this battle was the biggest battle to date, and some people have actually described it as really this would be World War I. It was the Egyptians versus the Hittites. Kadesh around the Lebanon-Syrian border, the largest battle of chariots ever recorded. We're talking 5,000 to 6,000 chariots. It was King Ramses who led the attack, and what's interesting is that both sides claim victory. If you look, there's actually both sides declare victory. But the interesting thing is this image that I have on the screen. This sort of brick. It's hard to see here. But this stone is what most people think of as the earliest peace treaty ever recorded. So after this massive battle, both sides retreated, both sides said, yeah, we beat them. But both sides came up with this treaty. Now, this particular stone, I believe, is in Turkey. There is a copper casting of this in the United Nations in New York. There's a similar writing in the tomb of Ramses II. So it is a well-recorded event. But when we look at this, it is a big battle. You've got the Egyptians coming with all their forces, and as many as 19 allies helping the Hittites. It was a big clash, and most people date the battle at about 1274 BC, and it was obviously during the reigns of Ramses. The fight, it's an interesting study when you look at it. So if you think of, it would be border of Lebanon and Syria, just north of the land of Israel. The battle was actually there because the Egyptians were there to take back the city. They had claim on the city, and there was the battle to reclaim this. Now, when you think of a battle like this, you know, both sides are claiming victory. How's Egypt getting to that area? They're going right through the land of Canaan to get to the battle site. So they're sending their chariots and their armies marching through that area. The battle was actually the culmination of many, suggestions are hundreds of years of conflicts between the two sides. The treaty didn't last that long, but it really was the culmination of the animosity. You had all that animosity, all of those battles, little skirmishes, culminating in a giant battle, which would have damaged both sides quite severely. You're not going to go into a battle in a small area with 6,000 chariots and come out with an army that's in good shape. It's like, you know, I think of chariots like the ancient tanks. So you send all your people in, and now you got tanks firing at everything, so it's not going to be a good thing. So why am I giving you this history lesson? Have you ever wondered about the timings of things in the Bible? When did things occur? Why did things occur? When you think about the Israelites in the land of Egypt, they're slaves. Why did they come out at that time when they came out? Why not 10 years earlier? Why not 100 years earlier? Why not 100 years later? You think about all these things. And, you know, think about it this way. Why didn't they go directly into the land? Sure, there were two spies that gave good reports. But in the past, in other things, God just told Moses, tell the people, go here. And that's what they did. Why do we have this suddenly here where, you know what, they go into the land, then they end up wandering the wilderness for 40 years. We can look at the scriptures and we can come up with all kinds of reasons for these things. And there were lessons that the children of Israel had to learn. There was a lot of growth they had to learn that had to happen. But during those 40 years in the wilderness, God was not sitting back waiting. God was active. I think there is no, you know, there's debate about which king, who was Pharaoh when the children of Israel came out. One of the more popular, and they say it's the Hollywood version, because if you watch the movie Ten Commandments, it's Ramses II. Some people will argue that, but to me, I think it makes sense. Because what would happen? How did Egypt, with all their chariots, get to the battle through the land of Canaan? So I think that either the Israelites were in the wilderness when this battle at Kadesh took place, they left Egypt right after this battle. Because it does talk about Pharaoh being worried about them lining up with their allies, or with their enemies. Basically, worried about them becoming allies with the Hittites. The thing that we can look at, though, God's working with the children of Israel. God is working with the, you know, has the Egyptians and the Hittites going through. And the thing that you look at when you think of all these things, why did God keep them in the wilderness? What was going on around them? There were battles and skirmishes. There were fights and wars. None of them affected the children of Israel. God protected them. But when they were wandering the wilderness, did God soften up their enemies? Did God knock down the people that they would have to conquer? And if you think about it, and if you keep looking, and if you look at the Bible, you'll see that God's hand has been active in people's lives ever since Adam. Think of the fact that Adam sinned and God made them coats. So many times throughout the Bible you can see God's hand involved in people's lives. So let's look at Elisha this versus the Syrians. This is a great this is a great story. It's one that reminds us of God's strength and God's mercy. It reminds us that God is watching over and caring for those that love him. If you look at our reading, from our reading this morning, beginning in verse 2 Kings 6, verses 11 and 12. Therefore the heart of the king of Syria was sore troubled for this thing. That meaning Israel always being, or all of his attacks failing. And he called his servants, said unto them, will you not show me which of us is for the king of Israel? And one of the servants said, none, my lord, O king, but Elisha, the prophet that is in Israel, telleth the king of Israel the words that thou speakest in thy bedchamber. Particularly like the comment, yeah, the words you speak in your bedchamber, words that no one else would hear, not even us, not even your counselors. So what happens in regards to this? Well, the armies lead a siege against the city of Dothan and are out there to capture Elisha. They're out to get him because they don't want him to help anymore. They don't want, you know, they want to stop him and perhaps grab him to work for them. Or at least stop him from helping Israel. It's at this point they lay siege. And it's at this point where the story gets interesting. First, we have Elisha's servant. And there's many ways that I can see this servant as being similar to us. And Elisha's servant comes to him in fear. This is not a small army. This is a large army that has come laid siege, and is bent to, and is there specifically for Elisha. They're going to block everything and everyone from getting in and out of the city until they grab Elisha. So the servant comes to him in fear. Everything is stacked up against them and there is no way out. So the servant comes to him in fear and says, what are we going to do? And this is where something wonderful happens. If you look at 2 Kings 6 once again, verse 16 and 17. And he answered, fear not. First words out of his mouth. Fear not. For they that be with us are more than they that be with them. And Elisha prayed and said, Lord, I pray thee, open his eyes that he may see. And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire round about Elisha. Let's take a look at, so I'm just going to read you from Deuteronomy chapter 20 in verse 1. When thou goest out to battle against thine enemies and seest horses and chariots and a people more than thou, be not afraid of them. For the Lord thy God is with thee, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. Elisha prayed that the man's eyes be opened, and he saw everything around him. But what are the odds that, you know, I think it would be awfully, I think this man, young man may have known the words from Deuteronomy, where it says, don't worry about it. You know, the Lord thy God is with thee. So the young man, when he saw the troops, he was overwhelmed. Everything was stacked up against him. He didn't know how to respond. Did Elisha scold him for not being stronger? Did he condemn him? Because he didn't remember what was written in Deuteronomy 20? Did he cast them out and say, go away? You know, you're so weak. Go away. No, he didn't. The first words out of his mouth were, fear not. And this is something that we need to remember when we become overwhelmed. Because when, you know, things will go horribly, we'll look at our lives and things will be going horribly wrong and we can become easily overwhelmed. But we need to stop and just think back, as was the case here, that God's hand is with us. Now, can you imagine that servant? What his reaction was when God opened his eyes and he saw what was there to support them. The power of God that he would have seen. The fact that the mountain was full of horses and chariots. Of fire. Not just a strong force. No, it was an overwhelming power. An overwhelming army that could not be opposed, that could not be stopped. A force greater than any man could muster. How long did he just sit there and look at it? And I think he would have come to realize that saying God is with us was a literal statement and not just a figure of speech. Because he now saw and was revealed to him the angels around about him. And to prove things even further, when they came to get Elisha, they were struck blind. I mean, here's this young man who went from being afraid to seeing God's forces there and then seeing when they actually arrived to grab Elisha. Elisha prays and the men are struck blind. That young man might have been overwhelmed for the joy. It might have seeing and the realizing that God's hand was involved in his life. It's interesting when you think about the kings of Israel. All the kings of Israel had one thing in common. They all did evil in the sight of the Lord. But here's the interesting thing. What happens when Elisha leads all the Syrians to the king of Israel? He wants to put them to death. He wants to kill them. He says it twice. Can I kill them? Or do I kill them? Can I kill them? And you see he's almost excited. It's like, yeah, my entire army's there. My enemy is here. I can wipe them out right now. They're right here. I can wipe them out. They're defenseless. I've got them. I'm going to be the greatest king of Israel because I've destroyed the Syrians. And maybe I can even expand our territory. But I'll bet you he was very disappointed when Elisha said, no. You must show them mercy. You must feed them and take care of them and then send them on their way. So this is a passage that is quite a bit in it. You see the power of God. You see God's mercy. You see God's hand at play in all of these things. And can you imagine those Assyrians walking away and realizing what had happened to them? They would have been thinking about these things as well. Why? And that could have brought them to God. And really there are several lessons, just these few verses, there are several lessons for us. His servant was overwhelmed, and even though he should have known better, he was not condemned, but rather comforted. And this is something that we need to bear in our minds as well, that when we falter, do we condemn ourselves? Do we sit there and struggle? Or do we, when we fail, do we focus on the failure and beat ourselves up? Or do we accept that God is with us? It's very easy for us to say, oh, woe is me, I have failed. In this biblical story, we can see that the hand of God was at work. It's pretty obvious that God was in control. His servant, I don't think was capable. Initially, I don't think his servant understood what God was capable of. Having doubts in ourselves and condemning ourselves is part of this. So what happens? He was told to not be afraid. God showed him an army of angels. He was with the man of God, but was still afraid. He needed assurance, and God gave it to him. What about us? Do you remember a time that you can see that God's hand was involved and guided you? I think of a simple case that happened, don't guess, 37 years ago. but I remember being on a road trip, and we were going from Great Lakes Bible School in Wisconsin to School East Mountain in New Jersey. 20-hour drive, and we had there were two groups of us. There was one car that had people who knew where they were going, and I was in the other car. Somehow we got separated. Somehow, not too far out, not too long from our trip, we got separated. At one point we came across a cutout, and we hadn't seen the other car for like 5 hours. For 4 or 5 hours, and at one point I can still picture the intersection on the highway. There was a junction of two highways, and we were pretty sure we had to take the highway that went to the left. But we thought it'd be better off if we kept going on this highway and see if we can find a service station or something where we can get a map. So we, about probably 10 to 15 minutes down the road, we came across one of the service stations. You know, in the U.S., they got the big things that go over top of the highway. It was great. So we went inside. We got ourselves a map, and we started looking for things. And we decided we'd grab a bite to eat since we were there. And a couple minutes later, and I've lost a page in my Bible, so we'll have to wing it. But a couple minutes later, as we were driving, as we were sitting there in this restaurant, we suddenly saw people walking in. And it was the people from the other car. The one person who knew where he was going told us, yeah, they were running low on gas, and the person who knew where we were going said, yeah, that was the turn we were supposed to take, but we were low on gas, so I knew there was a gas station here, so we came here before we went on that road. And I began thinking, here we were 15 minutes away, hadn't seen this group for hours, We're 15 minutes down the road, past our exit, and they show up. Now, it might seem like time and chance. It really might, but to me, it was God guiding us. To me, it was God showing us the way. And, you know, it really helped, it really made me focus, because it's not always the big things. You might not necessarily see God moving mountains, but it could be the little things where God's hand is involved with us. I mean, yeah, it might have seemed like time and chance, but here we are, a bunch of kids. You know, most of us were under 20, most of us were 18, and we're lost in the middle of a country that I don't know. And then God made us meet up with the people who knew we were. Oftentimes, we can become overwhelmed, like the servant of God. But like the servant of God, like it was revealed to the servant of, sorry, servant of Elisha, like it was revealed to him, God is with us. The thing that we can sometimes do is we can get down on ourselves. We can judge ourselves. We can sit there and we can look at our lives and we can say, I am not worthy. Look at all these things I have done. Look at how bad I am. Look at all my failures. And that negative cycle can keep going. And it can stop us from growing. When you think about it, if you can think back, I'm sure every one of us in this room can think of a time when God, where you could see God's hand in your life. And if you think about it, yes, it's true that we can never love, that we can't love God to the same way he does us. We can't ever, you know, we're always going to fail and we're always going to falter. And we can either say, woe is me, and stop growing. We can say that God, there is no way that God can love us because of our faults. But rather, it's the opposite. God loves us despite our faults. If it wasn't for that, if God didn't love, you know, without God's love, we wouldn't be here today. God loves us despite our faults. He sent his son to die, as a way to help to save us. Jesus himself went to the cross because he loved us despite our faults. You think the disciples left him, but Jesus still did it because he knew that we needed that to be done. And the hand of God, you can see all of these things is where the hand of God was in our lives. All of these things were done for us. They were not done for a stranger. Well, they were done for strangers. They were done for others. But they were done for us. It's not a simple act. Regardless of what we do, we need to make sure that we are trusting in God, realizing that yes, his hand is involved, and that hand is a loving hand. It's not a hand to smite us. It's a loving hand to guide us and to help us and to strengthen us. We'll conclude with reading from Isaiah 55. Ho, everyone that thirsteth, come ye to the waters. And he that hath no money, come ye, buy and eat. Yea, come, buy wine and milk without money and without price. Wherefore do you spend money for that which is not bread, and labor for that which satisfieth not? Hearken diligently unto me, and eat ye that which is good, and let your soul delight itself in fatness. Incline your ear and come unto me. Hear, and your soul shall live. And I will make an everlasting covenant with you, even the sure mercies of David. Behold, I have given him for a witness to the people, a leader and commander to the people. Behold, thou shalt call a nation that thou knowest not, and nations that knew not thee shall run unto thee because of the Lord thy God, and for the Holy One of Israel, for he hath glorified thee. Seek ye the Lord while he may be found. Call ye upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake his ways, and the unrighteous man his thoughts, and let him return to the Lord, and he will have mercy upon him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. Abundantly pardon. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. For as the rain cometh down and the snow from heaven and return thither, but watereth the earth and make it bring forth the bud, that it may give seed to the sower and bread to the eater, so shall my word be that goeth forth out of my mouth. It shall not return unto me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please, and it shall prosper in the thing whereto I sent it. For ye shall go out with joy and be led forth with peace. The mountains and the hills shall break forth before you into singing, and the trees of the field shall clap their hands. Instead of the thorn shall come up the fir tree, instead of the briar shall come forth the myrtle tree. And it shall be to the Lord for a name, for an everlasting sign that shall not be cut off. Thank you.